Welcome to a Nerdsign episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And the man behind the sound effects you hear is my co-host, Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, what's up?
And we are here tonight to discuss comic books, of course. And today marks off the beginning of San Diego Comic-Con, which is a big comic book and cartoon and TV and movie and toys and everything entertainment and media event, which is taking place in San Diego, California.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Pretty big deal. So even though today's the first day, we will discuss some of the news that was released today. And, of course, we'll also be talking about this week's new comic book releases. But first, some time for some plug-in. Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com. There you can find the previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews by myself and other reviewers on the site. Shout-outs to @CoatsVillain on Twitter. He's been doing some of the Valiant reviews, so give some of his reviews a read. Make sure to comment on them. Follow the Twitter account @TheClickNation. Make sure to like our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Find us on Google Plus. Just search for TheClickNation to find the page. Add it to your circles. Also, make sure to join the Click Nation community. Just search for the Click Nation community. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. YouTube.com/TheClickNation. And if you ever have some feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to TheClickNation@gmail.com. And with all that out of the way, we are going to discuss some of this comic book news from the at least last 7 days.
There's a massive amount.
Some of it goes back to last Friday, which would have been after the day we recorded.
Righto. It's like the priming the pump for San Diego.
Yes, sir. As I try to let people know we're live now online. So, let's see. Let me bring up news. First bit of news is supposedly X-Force and Magneto movies were confirmed by Rob Liefeld.
Wow. That's just, I don't know what to do, to clap or to cash register that. Cash register, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I'm not so sure I want to clap for that, you know, for that news. Honestly, to be, you know, considering clap the for. Fox track record? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the downside. Especially with all this news coming out from like they keep releasing this, you know, news from
the Wolverine.
Days of Future Past is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay.
Every day it's a new image leaked by Mark Millar or Miller, however you spell pronounce his name. So, and then they're jamming so many characters into this storyline. It's like a lot of these characters and mutants are just going to be background characters.
It's weird. You'd think they were doing, you know, they're jamming this many characters in there for like toy placement, you know, for a character, you know, introducing the character. I wonder if they're just not doing this just so that Marvel Studios won't be able to get their hands on some of these characters if they like cross over into Avengers, you know, territory. I don't know. It just seems, you know, it seems like it's a bit much. It's definitely overkill.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely the, hey, let's try to get some toys out of this.
Yeah, but you don't see. But my problem with that is you don't see them. You know, like if you ever like, you know, listen, you know, this is another podcast, you know, like discussing the downturn in Toys R Us and just walking through the toy aisle. You know, like you go like at random, like on any day, and it's just you can't, you know, you don't. There's not much out there anymore. It's you know, the pickings are pretty slim.
Yeah,
even with the movie tie-in. So,
and even taking it back to X-Force, as hopefully we've got our man Dirt joining us. We'll see if he's ready just yet. But to finish my statement, taking it back to X-Force, my question is, which version of X-Force are we going to see? Is it going to be the sort of like the very first original team that spun out of New Mutants, or is it going to be sort of the Rick Remender, Uncanny X-Force squad, you know, having Wolverine and Deadpool involved?
Knowing the movie industry, it's going to be a mix. It's going to be, they're going to meld them together somehow.
I can see like Cable being on it, Deadpool, just because they had their own book at one time, and then right. Having like offshoot characters, like maybe Cannonball get his movie appearance, but then sure. Someone that hasn't even been on X-Force before, like I'm trying to think of a Pixie or something like that.
Well, I mean, you know, if you go back to like the original like X-Force run, you're going to see like Richter and Shatterstar and
see, that's who I'd like to see.
You know, Boom Boom.
I'm old school, know? X-Force. Yeah, I want to give me Sunspot and Cannonball and some Warpath.
Well, you know, now they cross over into Avengers territory, so that's going to be interesting to see who puts them out first.
You know, I need some Warpath in the comic book. I would shout outs to Sam Humphries for getting, I think it was Sam Humphries. No, shout outs to Dennis Hopeless for getting Boom Boom into Cable and X-Force. Now I want some Warpath, who actually probably wouldn't fit since they already have the Strong Man and Colossus.
Yeah, you're there,
Dirt? I don't know. Am I?
Yes, you are.
I don't know. My video's not working. I don't know why.
You should want to show us your trimmed beard.
You trimmed your beard?
The beard may be trimmed, but the hair is not. I'm getting shaggy on top. I don't know the webcam, but it's not showing up.
Well, we can hear you, so.
Well, yeah, but you can't see my beautiful face.
Right.
Yeah,
as long as you're able to add the cover.
And all the visual gags that we have.
All the covers once we get into this week's right. Bullets. That's all that matters.
Let me see if those will pop up here real quick. Let me find the folder. Let's start with the book here. Pull that up. Get the app. And the screen share. Boy, everything's running kind of slow tonight. Is that working?
Yes.
It is.
Okay, well, I can still do that at least, I guess.
Sweet. Yeah, we'll just blame this on me trying to get this all, operation running at the last minute since I was eating dinner late.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah, and I didn't even create the event till like after 9. And.
Yeah, well, I was sitting there earlier today going, well, I guess he's not doing it because I haven't gotten anything.
Yeah, I actually had time at work too to go ahead and do it. I was just kind of being lazy. Huh, I say, well, I'm doing work.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure.
I saw the tweet, and I was like, oh, I guess I better log in.
And I didn't send Dirt when I sent the invite to Agent 70, I didn't include Dirt because I just figured he might have been busy today. And then I didn't see the green line under your Google contact name, so I think you were online.
You know what? My phone and my tablet are always online, regardless of if I'm paying attention or not.
Yeah, same here. But thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, definitely.
We were talking about the X-Force and supposed Magneto movies. And that's Dirt's 2 cents on the subject.
You know, I mean, it's like with all of those X-Men movies, it's like the first one I thought was pretty good. And then they did the second one. I thought that was really cool. And then the third one, I was like, I never want to see one of these again. And then they did the Wolverine one that was okay. And then they did the First Class that I thought was all right, but didn't seem like it was anything all that special to me. And then, I don't know, it's like they just keep making more. And they've got like, what, 4 more planned, 5 more planned? Something. It's just like, it's getting to the point where it's just like, I don't care enough. Like, I'll watch them when they come out on video or whatever, but I'm not dying to see them, you know?
That's exactly what I was just saying, Dirt. Welcome back, by the way. I was just saying that, you know, I just don't trust Fox's track record now. They don't give me any reason to have any kind of hope that, you know, an X-Force movie is going to work.
Well, and also, especially, like, if you've read the official synopsis of the movie, the official synopsis of Days of Future Past says that Kitty Pryde uses her mutant powers to fling her and Wolverine into the past. And it's like, wait, what?
Really, what?
Yeah, I heard that today. Goodness. Today was my first time hearing that.
Wait, that came out in San Diego? Wow.
Well actually, that was...
It came out on a comic book blog, I heard.
Yeah, let me see if I can... pull it up here real fast. Days of Future Past. I like to sing when I type. It goes better.
You have a keyboard for your tablet?
Oh, I'm on my desktop right now. I was in the other room with the tablet.
Oh, that's Chrome you have open.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, you have a bunch of apps on there. But I forgot Chrome puts a little page with all your apps if you want it.
Yeah, it's actually really handy. Let's see here. Where is the official?
Let's see why you're doing that. And, you know, is Ryan Reynolds still going to be playing Deadpool after all these years?
Well, he actually made some comment in some interview the other day where he said, you know, I'll still do it if they ask me to, but I really don't have much faith in the studio right now. Which, when you say something like that, is a good way to get yourself off the job.
Yeah. Like Jeremy Renner and Hawkeye.
All right, let's see here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's great. It's riveting, isn't it?
Doug is supposed to be out in Comic-Con today.
Like, watch me load up a web page.
It'll be nice for the audio people.
Not me.
When they go back and listen in.
Hey, do either of you guys have any contacts out in San Diego attending the San Diego convention this weekend?
I do not.
Dirt?
Yeah, I mean, I've got several friends out there.
Nice.
I hate traveling. I don't ever go, but yeah, I've got friends who are out there.
Nice. My usual contact that goes out there couldn't make it this year, so I'm basically without any kind of source for swag or stuff. What do we got?
Let me see if I can. I don't know. There's so many
so many
things that have popped up over the last few days that it's hard to figure out. Here we go. The official listing says, Kitty uses her powers to send Hugh Jackman's Wolverine back into the past.
Wow.
That's the official, in quotes, that's the official line from the studio.
Oh, that gets a gong.
Yeah.
That's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that's about the dumbest thing I think I've heard in a long time. Almost about as dumb as Phoenix just deciding to explode Cyclops for no reason. Or Deadpool having his mouth sewn shut. I don't know.
So, yeah, that's our not having faith in Fox statement for the episode. More news. Justice League War animated film confirmed for 2014 based based on the New 52 origin arc.
Have you guys watched Flashpoint Paradox yet?
It's technically not out, but there's ways to watch it. Are out. Exactly. Yeah, well, there's ways to watch it.
Yeah, and so I've got a review copy of it, and it's really good.
And I watched it too. So
I did see a link for it earlier today, but
Dirt knows what I mean.
Yeah. So for educational purposes.
Exactly. No, exactly. Yeah. For academic review purposes only. Yeah. You know what? Just very quickly on Flashpoint, Tim, you'll see what I mean when you watch it. Mm-hmm. It's probably the most Japanime animation looking Justice League cartoon I've ever seen, and I don't know how I feel about that yet.
From the trailer, I'm a fan of that art. It looked nice.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed a lot in this one, more so than I noticed it kind of in Dark Knight Returns, but more in this one, is that they add a lot of CGI to it, where like Cyborg will pull up a holographic display, and Cyborg is cell animation, and the background is cell animation, and everything he's interacting with is cell animation, but then right in the middle, his hologram is CGI. And I've noticed that blend a lot in this one, and I think that's just something that's a lot in, you know, animation nowadays anyway. Right. But it's not like the whole movie is not CGI. You know, most of it is traditional cell animation, but they just, a lot of these effects, and sometimes the big vehicles and things like that pop up are CGI on that. And it looks really cool.
I definitely dig the overall look. It's just that the, you know, seeing the characters rendered pretty much in a, you know, in an anime style, it's kind of jarring to see it all, you know, all at once. I you know, everyone who had ever seen, you know, an episode of Voltron had always thought, I wonder what DC would look like in anime style, or what Marvel would look like in anime style. And to actually see it done, you know, it takes some time to get used to, and I may have to go back and watch it again just to get an overall feel for it. And I wonder if maybe we should do a review when Tim finally gets around to watching it. We'll just, you know, we'll do a quick segment on it.
Well, Marvel has done anime,
strict anime, right?
Yeah, and DC with they did a Batman one 5 years ago, 4 years ago, that was like 6 or 7 shorts all combined together. Was it Gotham Knights?
Yeah, Gotham Knights.
Yeah, and those were anime. So, although, you know, each one was a different style of anime, this is a more traditional type anime style.
Exactly.
But yeah, I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, when they announced it, I remember saying, you know, this is great, because if this opens it up, you know, where they set up the New 52, then they have all the New 52 stories to pull from that they can start animating. And, of course, the next thing they announce is
just
that they're doing that first New 52 storyline. So I'm looking forward to it. And if this gives them the ability to take, you know, the best story arcs, you know, and pull them together and to start turning these into regular animated features, I'm all for it.
Because, you know, next up will be Night of Owls.
Yeah, exactly. I was saying Court of Owls stuff.
What is it? Court of Owls and then Night of Owls? Is that the
I don't recall.
I
know Court of Owls is, I think, you know, is the group, you know, within the comic. I'm not sure what the art title
is. I think they call it Night of Owls, like, whenever at night where it crossed over in all the other Bat titles. I think is what they call that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Court of Owls will be the next up. In fact, what other stories could they do in the New 52 standpoint? I guess maybe by the time they do Court of Owls, it'll be like 3 or 4 years into it, so maybe they'll have Trinity War or Justice League Dark.
I could see him pulling even a Suicide. The first Suicide Squad story could work really well. The first Deathstroke arc.
The Green Lantern stuff, too.
Although that one's...
It's convoluted. Weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to get into it without all the history, you know, because that one was...
It had to go pre-New 52.
Or to establish the colors and all that.
Although, technically, I guess Brightest Night, or Darkest Night and Brightest Day still happened in the New 52. We just didn't see it in the New 52, but they reference it like it already happened, so...
Yeah.
And
not at confusion.
Yeah, but, like, I would love to see the first Deathstroke arc. Because that was great. That was one of the
Was it?
My happiest things from the New 52. One
was that, that was pre, that was pre-Liefeld?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, Deathstroke is one of those books. Deathstroke was so good, and then they brought in Liefeld, and it immediately tanked. And then as soon as he left and they brought in a new writer, it was suddenly great again. Like, it was obviously the problem was Liefeld. If Liefeld hadn't been on that book, then I'm sure it would still be going today. But it dropped so much when Liefeld took over. You know, we had people that would walk into the comic book store, and they had been reading Deathstroke, you know, since day one, and they read the Teen Titans because they want to see the rest of the family, and they got Team 7 and everything else, you know. They'll get everything Deathstroke, but as soon as they saw that book with Liefeld, they were like, nope, put it back.
So, yeah, I'm assuming neither one of you have read the Team 7 book, right?
No. Nope. I read them.
Okay, so I guess in that arc or those issues, they were hunting for the Holy Grail?
No, they were hunting for Pandora's
Box. I'm getting. I'm thinking about Kanye, Jay-Z's latest album. Holy Grail, Pandora's Box, whatever. but yeah, so they were searching for Pandora's
Team
Box.
Team 7 was set in the past.
Yeah.
So it was several years back, and it was back, like, Amanda Waller, excuse me, Amanda Waller was still just a regular grunt, you know, working in the special forces and whatever. She wasn't in her, you know, position. She hadn't gotten blackmail on everybody yet to move up the chain. So it was her past, and it was Deathstroke's past, and Grifter's past, everybody, you know, together on this team.
You know, I'm thinking back to it. I'm sure the sales probably weren't good for on the book, which is why it was canceled. But that seemed like that would be the type of book that they would need to keep around just because it sort of was going to try to fill in the blanks for some of the stuff that happened in the past.
Well, it was one of those weird books where
and it included a lot of characters that are spread out amongst the universe.
Yeah, Blackhawks was kind of the same way, where you had a bunch of characters that weren't necessarily superheroes, but they're in the superhero world. So you did have some interesting interactions in the way that, you know, someone without superpowers, how do they deal as trying to be, you know, the special agents, the SEAL Team 6, whatever that you send in. You think these are the guys that are cream of the crop, the Green Berets, you know, these are the top Navy SEALs, Special Forces guys, and then suddenly they're superheroes. You know, it's like, how do they deal with suddenly not being that top dog anymore by something they could never even hope to match up to? One of the neat things about Team 7 is that it brought back Majestic. And so Majestic was the
Superman
analog. Yeah.
Superman of the, like Wildstorm universe, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
They brought him back. And the thing was, they brought him back. And then the series ended with him going off to do his own thing, which if the series had continued, I guess you would have found out why there's no Majestic now. And this book was set several years in the past.
Oh, so
it's like, what happened to Majestic, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
So there's a hole in the storyline they have to explain somewhere.
There should be an ongoing series that's set in the past just to try to fill in the blanks for some of the stuff. I don't care.
Well, they should have just started.
In the past, so start from the beginning.
Yeah, they should just. But yeah, then they should have started everything with like Batman Zero Year. I love Zero Year. But that's what should have been issue one of the New 52. You know.
but then you wouldn't be able to keep the continuity for Batman and Green Lantern.
Yeah, they would have found a way to work around it. I mean, I think they should have done a year of character building where you have that first year of Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, you know, whoever, getting their powers, figuring out what they're doing. They kind of bump into each other on the peripherals every once in a while. And then after a year, then boom, it's Justice League time. Bring everybody together into the big team, you know. Instead, we had, you know, these characters.
You couldn't wait that long.
Yeah, well,
you can't wait that long. Honestly, I think marketing and the bean counters probably got in the way of that, if that was ever even considered.
Yeah, and I think that's. I mean, on the one hand, I can understand you want to start with a heavy hitter like Justice League that has all the characters together, you know, to do something with. But at the same time, there were so many questions, and there still are so many questions of what, like, Bane. attacked Batman and broke his back at some point, but does that mean Azrael was there? Does that mean Azrael was, you know, Batman for a while, or is that not there anymore? You know, you had Robin retconned even after 7 months into the New 52, they decided he wasn't a Robin anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like they didn't have all of that stuff figured out when they decided to, you know, jump through the time stream a little bit.
And I can kind of forgive them for that, because it is a lot of characters to try to get them situated where they're going to, you know, put them in the new universe. And which is, you know, probably brings up the point, what probably would have been better if they had held off until they had everything sort of as finely tuned as possible.
But I mean, I still give him credit. It was a super ballsy move.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Originally I used to knock him for, oh, this doesn't make sense. And this can't happen. And, you know, all this stuff happened in 5 years, but now it's like, yeah, they did something different. I try to give people credit for doing different, like Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of companies that would sit there and say, okay, we're going to take everything we have and just kind of trash it and start over. You know, it's definitely a big move, and it took a lot of guts to do it. So I give him credit for that. But, you know, I just think it's one of those things that you're going to make that big move. They should have had some of that stuff sorted out a little bit better before they got started. But, you know, I mean, it's comics. The time's going to go by. They're going to have a good idea, and they're just going to say, well, you know, we're going to change history to make this new story work because this new story's better, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't get too bogged down with continuity on everything, you know. Marvel has that rubber band continuity, so, you know, history in the Marvel Universe is always kind of changing. Now they're saying that Captain America, they're going to start shifting Captain America to being like a Vietnam War vet who got frozen instead of a World War II vet, you know, really? Because having him as a World War II guy is too old. And, you know, all these people that were in his comic back then can't be around anymore, you know, and all this kind of stuff. There have been talks about doing that for maybe 2 years now. So
it's too late for that now, though, with the movie having come out, you know, establishing pretty firmly in most people's, you know, minds that he's a World War II vet. They just basically he's just frozen longer, you know.
So. Yeah, well, or they say he wasn't thawed out until 5 years ago.
Right.
You know,
frozen longer.
I mean, it's just there's just a lot of things that they do where they just kind of ignore a bunch of stuff and just kind of change it on the fly as they go. So, I mean, I don't know. Either way, if you prefer your rubber band history where it hasn't happened that much, or, you know, DC style where it seems like every so often they pull out an actual calendar and start marking off dates, you know. Either way, as long as the stories are coming out that are good, you know, and I think both companies have some really good stories going on right now that I'm happy with from both of them. So, you know, as much as I make fun of people like, DC's so much better than Marvel. What are you guys, stupid? Blah, 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 whatever. Like, I try to stay away from that because, you know, who do you see on the street corner going, man, NBC sitcoms are so much better than CBS's. You're an idiot. You know, that doesn't happen. And that shouldn't happen in comics either. It's like changing the channel. You know, if you want to watch Big Bang Theory on one channel and you want to watch reruns of Seinfeld on some other channel, then, you know, go ahead. Just the same way with comics. If you want to read a Punisher story one day and you want to read a Superman the next, you know, it's switch the dial and get a different story.
As long as you're enjoying one of them.
Right.
Okay.
So anyway, all right, so that's the end of my rant.
And that's Justice League War, so look for that in 2014. Harley Quinn's going to get her own ongoing series later this year. More DC. Another female character getting her solo book going. And it'll be somewhat tied into the Bat family, I'm sure. So that should maybe keep the sales somewhat steady on it. At least that'll be the hope for DC. And it's going to be written by Jim.
Is it written by Palmiotti?
Palmiotti and
drawn by Amanda Conner.
Well, she's co-writing it with him.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think an artist has actually been named. People assumed it was Amanda Conner, but
well, because they have a promo piece of artwork out there. I'm pretty sure Amanda Conner did it.
Yeah, but they have it listed as co-writer.
Okay. maybe she just did the promo art for Comic-Con just to show it off.
Yeah, which is nice.
I wonder, though, if that means Suicide Squad isn't long for the world. Because she was kind of the main for that book.
I can't remember if we announced it last week or not, but Alex Cott, I think is that his name, he just took over writing duties on Suicide Squad, and now he's off of it.
Oh, I didn't even hear that one.
That came out I think that came out right after we recorded last week.
Yeah.
Did he say why?
No, all he said was he hit his deadlines and he was knocking it out of the park.
And then he quit.
Or he didn't say he quit. He's just off the book now.
Right.
So, maybe what he wrote was terrible. I don't know.
But it's funny because I read the first issue, his first issue, where they brought James Gordon Jr. on, and I mean, it was but everyone else has been loving his, I'm assuming, two or three issues since he took over. Probably just two, because I want to say he just got on the book. But people said they loved it, and now he's off.
Yeah, and it's funny because I have every issue of Suicide Squad, but I don't think I've read it since...
he came on?
No, since Death of the Family.
Oh.
Like, I'm so many issues behind. It's just one of those things where, you know, some Saturday when I'm bored, I'll just sit down for 4 hours and, you know, read the whole run. I just, you know, haven't gotten around to it.
That's how the Gambit series is going to be for me once it ends. I'll be like, okay, time to finally read it now. But speaking of other people off books, I didn't actually have this in the news, but I remember reading it yesterday or Monday or earlier in the week. Justin Jordan is off of Superboy.
They say who's bringing it back? Who's coming in?
They have not, but it hasn't affected his other work for DC. They say it was editorial differences of why he left, but they haven't announced who's going to take over.
Huh.
Okay.
So there's that. Other news. The only other things I had written down were, you know, of course, today Comic-Con started, and the images of the Sentinel's head from Days of Future Past were shown, and there was an Electro teaser video from Amazing Spider-Man 2. I watched the Electro one. Jimmy Fox kind of looked like a big Smurf. And the Sentinel head looked pretty cool. It was like a regular size head, so people were wondering, you know, was it scaled down or maybe like human-sized Sentinel robots? Kind of don't know. We have to wait.
And we wait with bated breath.
Agent 70, was there any other news you wanted to mention?
There's so much coming out, even though, you know, it's only the first day of San Diego. It's kind of hard to filter through.
Since Marvel had their live blogs up, actually, and of course, Newsarama had some live blogs going, so I read some of those. The Superior Spider-Man one probably would be worth going through. I haven't actually had a chance to look at it yet.
I saw that Ethan Van Sciver posted something on Facebook that he is now the ongoing cover artist for Earth 2, I believe it is.
That was Brett Booth doing that, right? Since he does every other cover in DC?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Seemed like he has. I like how that's an announcement. The new cover artist.
Well, and it's weird because, he's a guy that normally does... Well, although, wait, let me think about this for a second, because...
He was on the Batman book, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, he did Legends of the Dark Knight, a couple issues of that, but I just remember he also said something on Facebook the other day about how he signed some sort of deal with Robert Kirkman, but he couldn't talk about it yet, and it's going to be some sort of announcement for San Diego. But he said he's not leaving DC. When he made that announcement, he signed the contract with Kirkman. He couldn't talk about it, but he's not leaving DC. So he's doing some sort of work for Kirkman. So I wonder if him doing covers as a regular gig is because he's going to be doing something else with Image and Kirkman. whether or not that's
he can't do interiors.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's going to be doing covers for Invincible from now on too, or something. Or, you know, maybe there's another book coming out from Skybound, which is Kirkman's imprint. You know, maybe he's doing something original over there. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but yeah, it is kind of weird that they would make him a regular cover guy, seeing as how he does do, you know, regular books. But yeah. I just thought that was interesting. So that's another thing I need to follow up and figure out what he's doing for Kirkman.
Okay, that was my first time hearing that.
Yeah. You know, at the DC All Access panel, there's a Shazam monthly coming in 2014 and maybe a Doom Patrol monthly as well. I'm presuming that the Shazam monthly is going to be coming out of the events of Trinity War.
Is Gary Frank going to draw it?
And is Loeb going to write it?
Because if Gary Frank is going to draw it, then I'll buy it. Like, I don't care who's writing it. Liefeld could be writing it. As long as Gary Frank is drawing it, I'll buy it.
Well,
no
I guess
announcements on that yet.
He left Green Lantern, so he has an extra book, an extra opening. Because he hasn't taken on any other work, has he?
Well, I believe so.
Because he's doing the two Justice Leagues. Well, League of America and Justice League. I forget there's a Dark out there. So he's doing those two Justice Leagues and Aquaman. And then he had Green Lantern, but he's off that now. So he could fill that gap with Shazam.
Yeah. So the only part of the announcement is that Geoff Johns basically alludes to a Shazam monthly coming in the new year. So no real details. They may be saving exact announcement for one of the later cons. So we'll see if they announce it at New York.
Or they have more panels this week, I'm sure. Maybe they're saving it for one of those.
Right.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Well, I don't know exactly how this all ties in, but Kirkman, they did some announcement at Comic-Con, and I got an email from Dark Horse, the press release. But Dark Horse press releases are simply they send out an image. And that's all they send out. There's no, you know, words to go along with it. And so it's just this image of you see a bloody road, like a highway with a spot of blood on it. And it just says dead. And the A in dead is an X. So here we go. So there's something. This is the 10th anniversary of Walking Dead. So the X would tie in with Roman numerals.
10 years, right?
10 years. But but it's a teaser, and there's an announcement tomorrow. And then Saturday there's going to be an announcement at the Skybound panel. So so there's something going on with the 10th anniversary there. So maybe there's an offshoot book. Maybe there's a secondary book that they're going to bring out for the 10th anniversary.
Maybe they'll introduce Daryl.
Actually, apparently someone asked Kirkman that, and he said, no, Daryl is never going to be in the comic ever. He's for the TV show.
All righty. If that's it.
One thing. I did see the solicits. I was going through some of the solicits for, I think it's September, and the Forever Evil. I didn't realize this before when I was looking through all the stuff, but apparently – as part of Forever Evil, the Justice League is somehow seemingly killed. Like, all the heroes are dead. I didn't realize that they were supposed to be dead. And the teasers are for the Crime Syndicate coming. So the Ultraman, Superwoman, Owl.
Yeah, I read that. Bleeding Cool was guessing that the Crime Syndicate could be coming over.
Well, because apparently for Teen Titans, Green Lantern, Nightwing, I think those books, they have little teaser images out that show the Crime Syndicate characters, but you just see like their feet or their silhouette, or, you know, it's not like huge.
So that's who those feet are supposed to be for.
Yeah, it's like Ultraman and Superwoman.
And you know what? That actually just made me think of something, because I think they already said today in one of the early DC panels today, whoever, might have been Jeff Johns, but someone from DC said that Lex Luthor plays a big role in Forever Evil. And I wonder if it's not our Earth's Lex Luthor, but the whatever Earth that is, Lex Luthor, who's the hero version. Because isn't he a hero in that whatever universe that the Crime Syndicate comes from?
Yes. Yeah, Lex Luthor is.
Yeah. And then it ties into the Injustice video game.
Well, and also the thing is, if we want to go ahead and move into Trinity War for this week.
Yeah, we can, because that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, Justice League of America came out this week, and it, you know, a little more details of what's going on. One of the characters who it seems like is orchestrating the whole thing is a character that we saw in the, what was he called, Society of Evil or whatever. They've been appearing in Justice League
Secret
of America.
Society.
Yeah, Secret Society. The guy who's in charge of that was some guy who they had like in a bowler hat, wearing a nice suit, all that kind of stuff. Well, he appears in Justice League. I don't remember if it was in Justice League or if it was in America. When they're going through the tarot cards, they show him, and he's labeled as the Outsider. That's in America. All right, yeah. So in Justice League of America, he's labeled as the Outsider. Well, the Outsider in the, like, 60s comics, 70s comics, whatever, in DC, the Outsider was Alfred. Alfred took a bump on the head and became Batman's arch nemesis for a while, and he was calling himself the Outsider. Well, in this book, we've got this guy who has the thin little mustache. He's got the thin, lanky build. He's got that bowler hat like Alfred used to wear.
He's got,
you know,
head shaped like Alfred.
Yeah, he looks like Alfred.
He knows where to go in the Batcave to get kryptonite.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's got the chunk of kryptonite. Well, we saw in an issue of, I don't remember if it was in Batman or Detective, several months ago, somebody broke into the Batcave, and they put their hand on the hand scanner, and it recognized who they were and granted them access. Mm-hmm. Well, the only people with access are going to be Bruce Wayne and Alfred. So,
it was an issue of Justice League.
Oh, was it Justice League? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is Alfred from another reality. Most likely, he's probably from Earth-3, where the Injustice Society is, or the Crime Syndicate is coming from. And he is part of, you know, Flashpoint, New 52, whatever, or one way or another found his way to our Earth. And my guess is, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and make one of my wild predictions that will never come true, but my prediction is that he knows the Crime Syndicate is coming and that they're powerful and they're almost impossible to stop. So he's trying to build some sort of group to counter them because he knows that they're eventually going to find their way to Earth. So I'm looking at this as...
Who's building the group?
The Outsider.
So he's building the Crime Syndicate, the Society of Evil.
Right. He's trying
to build... Secret Society.
Yeah, he's trying to build this super society, and he's either going to control the Justice League or try to destroy them to keep them from getting in his way so that he can build a group to counter the Ultraman and Superwoman and Owl and all of them when they finally make their way to Earth. He's trying to build up something against them because he probably ran, you know, his own criminal organization on Earth-3, and it got destroyed, got killed by those dudes. And so... I'm thinking he's going to somehow be a foil, you know, not only to what he's doing now with the Justice League and everything, but then once the villains come in, he's going to play a bigger role in turning the tide against them to try to get them off Earth because he wants Earth for himself. So, again, I may be reading way too much into it, but that's I'm looking at that.
You heard it here first, people. I think we just quote unquote spoiled. At least part of Trinity War.
Or at least deduced.
Yes.
Because that's definitely Alfred. Like, everything points to he's got to be Alfred.
Yeah, he looks like just a gray-skinned version of Alfred.
Well, because when I first saw him, I thought he was just supposed to be some knockoff of the Joker, like the old-style Joker, you know, because he's got the pale skin and, you know, he wears the nice suit and has the cane and everything. But then as time went on, after we got to this episode of Justice League of America, then I kind of went back and started thinking about, you know, especially that break-in at the mansion at Wayne Manor. And he's got the kryptonite here in this one. So it's like you start to put those puzzle pieces together, and he's playing a much bigger role than being just this knockoff villain in the pages of Justice League of America.
And actually, I want to say it's this issue of Justice League of America from this week where it's like on the first or second page, there's a there's an image of him in a panel. And in that panel, that picture, he definitely looks like Alfred to me.
Yeah, he's like sitting at the table looking at his little coin, and yeah, he definitely looks like it. The other thing I thought was interesting in this book is we hear a little bit more about the question. One thing I was actually having a conversation with somebody about the other day was when you look at the Trinity of Sin, you've got Pandora, you've got Judas, who's the Phantom Stranger, and then there's a third guy. And I kept asking people, you know, who's this third guy? And no one can figure it out. No one can figure out who this third guy is. Well, in this issue of Justice League of America, whatever the question did, his crime was so bad that they wiped his memory and wiped away his identity. And so him not having an identity is why he has no face. So before, you know, Question was this guy who was a reporter who'd pull out the putty and put it on his face and he'd release the gas that made it look like he has no face. Well, you know, now he's actually this supernatural entity who has no identity. He's just this wandering spirit who's got no place to call his own. And now that I'm in the middle of this conversation, I've completely lost it. But there was some mythological character who was forced to wander the earth, not Kane from Kung Fu. It was somebody else who was
from
forced
from another former media.
Yeah, well, from I don't remember if it was like a Native American story or if it was like a of all times. Now is the time. I can't think.
Like the Forgotten One, like Gilgamesh.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yeah. Just a guy whose entire identity has been wiped out and it's hidden from himself. Mm-hmm. You know, we see Phantom Stranger kind of struggling, like what's his place in the world and whatever, but whoever the question is, he's a guy who actually, and so it's one of those things where they may never answer it.
Yeah. You know,
he may be that character that's forever, you know, has no identity and that may just be who he is and they may never, you know, specify a person. But you know, it's funny because I was having this conversation with people and I go, well, you know, because the Phantom Stranger is Judas, and people were going, what? Like, yeah, he's the guy who betrayed Jesus. If you go back and read it, they keep talking about how he betrayed the guy who was so nice and pure and, you know, whatever, and he had the coins that he sold the guy out for, and those coins became his necklace. And I couldn't believe how many people didn't make that connection to Judas.
Yeah,
from the Bible. That kind of surprised me. But yeah, everything about Trinity War, I'm loving. Everything about Justice League right now. For the first time in my life, I'm looking forward to an issue of Justice League Dark.
And that's going to take something special. I'll be reading my first Justice League Dark next week.
Same here. Well, and I got to give Tim Dog a lot of credit. I just flipped to that page that he was referencing where the Outsider / Alfred, you know, where the resemblance in this particular side shot really does look a lot like Alfred. And I totally didn't pick it up the first time through. So good pickup on Tim's part.
And I actually wouldn't have noticed it until, because I read that Bleeding Cool article where they speculated on the Outsider being Alfred from the Earth 3. And then like I said, when I flipped to that second, whatever page it was, I was like, oh, yeah, you look like Alfred. thank you, Doug Mackey.
The other thing was if you read all of the Flashpoint tie-ins, there was an Outsider series. And in that one, he was a guy from India. So it was, you know, not Alfred in Flashpoint. But that guy was a criminal mastermind. Whatever his superpowers were, gave him pale skin. He was bald. He was thin. He was lanky. He wore a white suit. Always had a suit and tie. You know, looked impeccable. So he had that kind of clean look like Alfred always has. But he was a criminal mastermind of that world, and he basically like unified all of Asia more or less into his criminal empire. So. you know, him, the idea that a character, you know, whoever this outsider is coming from another Earth where he's, you know, he's this criminal mastermind who controlled, you know, a large portion of the Earth. I think that that makes sense that that's why that story was in Flashpoint. Like, that's why the character was there, because they probably were foreshadowing to this, playing around with the character. And that's why I think there's going to be some tie-in with the crime syndicate, because I could totally see if this guy, you know, controls all of Asia, and then suddenly, you know, the Criminal Justice League shows up and says they're going to take over the whole world, and there goes his criminal empire, he's definitely going to have a grudge. So I think there's going to be some sort of tie-in there.
Okay. Anything else?
I read way too many comics.
That's impossible. anything else from Justice League of America number 6?
Did you read it, Agent 70?
I did, although not as exactly, not as carefully as you folks.
I wasn't crazy about Doug Mankey's art in this. I don't know why.
I mean, I guess what it is, well, I guess my biggest problem is that I'm just not nearly as invested in the New 52 stuff. And there were a lot of elements in this book taken from beyond the, you know, what I'm familiar with in terms of the Justice League stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that, you know, all that was basically thrown into the pot and stirred. And maybe some of it just didn't quite make sense.
Yeah, like if you hadn't been reading Justice League of America, all the stuff with Steve Trevor and Amanda Waller would kind of leave you like having no idea what they're even talking about. And Wonder Woman, of course, she runs off to talk to what's his face, who makes all the weapons,
Hephaestus.
Yeah, whatever his name is.
Thinking he made Pandora's box,
but he didn't make Pandora's box. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. There are other gods in play. There we go. So while we're on DC, we'll, let's see, go.
It was actually kind of a light week for DC this week.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad. I still haven't read everything that I planned on reading, put it that way. Animal Man 22. Okay.
Did you read it?
No, I'm just sort of, naming some of the.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, bigger name books that came out. So if I don't hear anything, I'll just move on to the next one. That's how I've kind of been doing it the last couple of weeks. I guess I'm assuming print format, Batman 66 number 1, because that's been coming out digital, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Which I'm gonna check out eventually.
So you haven't checked out the digital version at all?
No, they're 99 cents, I hear, so I'm like, hey, might as well.
Yeah, well, this particular one in digital is being done the same way Marvel Infinity is. So you'll have a panel, and you tap the button, and one of the characters in the panel may move, and you tap the button, and someone may come into focus, and something else goes out of focus, you know, as opposed to the regular comic. So it was kind of interesting to see how they translated that into a print comic, because one panel of the print comic may actually be 3 or 4 panels digitally.
To reflect the movie.
Yeah, so it is kind of interesting because I've got the digital one, so I just kind of sat there, you know, for 20 minutes and did a comparison, kind of flipping between them. And, you know, it was interesting to see. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of work to plan out a book like this when you got to plan, you know, it's digital versus print. Usually they just cut the page in half and you don't have to worry about it. But then they have this extra step now where it's not only cut in half, but yeah, they got to figure out how to make the panel work, you know, as a static image as well as being fluid.
Which way do you prefer for this one, just for this comic, since you read both versions?
In general, I don't really care for the way Marvel does Infinity, and I don't really care for the way they do that where you tap on the panel and one thing moves in the panel and everything else stays the same. Because to me, that just seems too much like really crappy animation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm tapping it and something moves, and I'm not a big fan of that. So I prefer
straightforward comic.
Well, the other thing that DC's doing as part of their digital initiative is they're going to do those choose your own adventure type stories where the storyline is going to branch and you choose which branch of the story you're going to follow. So I'm looking a little more forward to that than this. I don't mind reading a digital comic, and I don't mind reading a print comic, but I really enjoy, if I'm going to do that, reading the printed page on my computer screen or on my tablet screen, as opposed to going panel by panel or having these crappy little transitions and animations in between them.
Okay. All right. Batman and Catwoman number 22.
No chance to read it.
I think I'm going to stop reading these Batman and books. Because he's still grieving over, Damian, and it's been months now, and are even the other Batman books even acknowledging it anymore?
Well, yeah, Incorporated is still like on the day it happened.
So yeah, I stopped reading that too after I read his death issue. So,
you need to go back and read the Incorporated from last week or the week before. Okay. The one that just came out. You definitely, because there's, in fact, I think Bleeding Cool tried to spoil it, even, so you may have actually seen what it is, but go back and read that issue, because there's some stuff in there that's actually, I don't even know how to explain it. It's pretty okay. Wicked. Pretty wicked.
So that's a nice teaser.
Okay.
And I don't want to spoil it. Like, I don't want to say too much, you know. But
we may have talked about it on the show, but I obviously don't remember.
But go back and read it. We'll talk about it next week. Go back and read the Batman Incorporated that just came out last week or the week before, and we'll talk about it next week.
Okay. Anyone read Batman and Catwoman 22?
No, I'm not a Catwoman fan.
Okay. There was a Batman Beyond Unlimited number 18. That's digital, I'm assuming? Or is that... Yeah, it's digital.
Yeah, that's the print of the digital.
Oh, the print of the digital, okay. Yeah, because the Unlimited gets all the stories together.
Yeah.
Batwoman 22, Birds of Prey 22, blah, blah, blah. Green Lantern, New Guardians 22. I have not read this one, but I plan on it.
I read it.
Oh.
I read it. Yeah, I know, right? I'm chirping up. I'm like, hey, I actually read a DC. it's definitely moving the Green Lantern portion of the DC universe towards what is that? Lights Out? That they're going to call this event or something like
that? Yeah, just a month long event.
Right. They're moving the line towards that particular event by establishing the new big bad in the Green Lantern portion of the universe named Relic. And basically in this issue, Relic basically does his due diligence on the current status of the Lantern Corps, the various Lantern Corps in the DCU, and kind of establishes that he's a really, really tough guy. He's going to be a big bad and be very hard for the combined might of the various corps to take down. So it's definitely a building block for that storyline.
Okay. I skipped Fables 131, but did anyone read it? Take that as a no. we talked about Justice League of America already. I haven't read Justice League of America's Vibe number 6 yet, but I will. More chirps.
Yeah.
There was Supergirl 22 and Legion of Superheroes 22.
Anybody?
I own Supergirl. I've got a copy sitting right here. I just haven't had time to get to it yet. I like, in general, where the storyline's been going the last couple months. Michael Allen Nelson took over, and basically Supergirl's dying from the kryptonite poisoning. She was not 100% cured, and she's going off into space to try to see if she can track down some sort of cure or something. She's got to get away from Earth. Just too much stuff has happened. So she's kind of doing her own exile thing, kind of like what happened with Superman several years ago. Well, I say several years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. But I mean, this particular issue, I just haven't had time to get to yet. But overall, I have been enjoying where Supergirl's been going the last couple months.
And last from DC is Wonder Woman 22, which I haven't read yet, but I will. I actually started reading Wonder Woman last month's issue with 21. Didn't really know what was going on, but hey, no time like the present to jump into a book.
Well, it had the New Gods in it, so I was, you know, curious about it, and I flipped through this particular one, but I don't know. There's just something about Wonder Woman in the New 52 that I don't care about as much. I don't know if it's because they've done so much to rely on her B characters, you know. It's not so much about her, but it's about her relationships with her friends and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and I don't know. I'm just not. And
I hear so much good stuff about it, so if I hate it, let me go for it.
But you did skip one DC book that I read this week that I enjoyed quite a bit.
Oh, let me see.
Can I guess He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Oh. Tell us about it.
One of the things that this book is doing is giving like a new mythology to the characters. You know, they had their own storyline in the mini comics when the toys came out, and then the cartoon came out and kind of redid the entire storyline, and then it all kind of died away for a while, and then they brought back the toys, and with the toys they've been doing a new mythology, and so they just decided there's all these different versions of He-Man out there, we'll just go ahead and do our own. So they've done their own storyline here in DC Comics, and the main story that they put together here really feels like Jack Kirby's Fourth World. And a lot of people have made the comment that, you know, the Masters of the Universe movie that came out in the 80s felt like a Fourth World story. It just happened to be, you know, He-Man and Skeletor, but it really felt like it was Orion and Darkseid. And that's kind of what they're doing here. They've made Hordak into the Darkseid character. Hordak kidnapped She-Ra, basically Princess Adora, when she was a little girl, and raised her as his own daughter. And he's made her the head of his army. And he sent his army to Eternia to basically destroy King Randor and his empire and to take over Castle Grayskull, because that's where all the magic is. You know, all the magic has been fortified within Castle Grayskull. So there's this ongoing siege that's being led by Hordak's armies against Castle Grayskull, and it's being led by Princess Adora. And the thing is, it's like King Randor recognizes, Man-at-Arms recognizes that that's He-Man's long-lost sister, that's Prince Adam's long-lost sister, but Prince Adam hasn't figured it out yet. And it's like they're keeping the secret from him. Teela gets kidnapped and taken by Princess Adora, and so she's beginning to figure out that the two of them are related, that they're twin brother and sister, but Princess Adora hasn't figured it out either. Being raised by Hordak, she thinks that she is the legitimate spawn of Hordak. All these other people realize that she is the long-lost princess and missing twin sibling of Prince Adam. So there's that whole kind of like kingdom versus kingdom, you know, the new world, new Genesis versus Apocalypse, the way that they traded their kids, you know, to raise them differently. They're kind of playing on that motif a little bit on here. And they're really playing this up as kings and kingdoms and armies. You know, it's whenever you think He-Man, you always think of, you know, brutes with swords and the big fights with Skeletor, and you've got Cringer hiding in the corner, and Beastman always, you know, he drops the magical device and, you know, everybody gets away. But they've really played this up, kind of really playing on that medieval feel to it. Even though there's magic and sorcery and, you know, flying cars and whatever, it really does feel like they took Conan and added the sci-fi element to it, you know. So I've really been enjoying the stuff that they've been doing here. And even if you've never read, you know, Masters of the Universe or He-Man comic before, if you kind of played with the toys as a kid, but you know, you're not really into the storyline, you could pick this up with issue one, and it's really made. It's a new storyline, a new mythology. It works for new readers, which is why a lot of the toy fans are like pissed off and freaking out, because it's like, that doesn't follow the cartoon. It's like, no, it's actually good. And so
that's funny.
I've really been enjoying it.
You reviewed issue number one. Well, I just don't recall. I don't know if we ever got around to doing two and three. So I'm glad that it's up to four, and I don't know if it's gaining steam or not, but with any luck, it'll keep going.
Well, I'm hoping it's one of those things that when it hits issue 6 and they put out the trade paperback, that a bunch more people are going to give it a shot, because this does, as a property, as a licensed property, a lot of the people will not go out and buy the monthly comic. They'll wait until the trade shows up at Barnes & Noble, you know?
Right.
So I'm hoping that once they get the 6 issues out and they bundle it together, that, you know, really kind of brings up the bottom line on it and brings a whole bunch of new readers to it, because it is really well done. And it's written by Keith Giffen, you know, and he's a stalwart in the industry. You know, he's been working for, 40 years now in comics, so... he definitely has the chops to do it, and he's been doing a pretty good job.
Okay. One time I didn't even know there was a He-Man comic until they announced that He-Man versus DC or He-Man DC team-up book.
Yeah, yeah. And that starts next month, does it?
That's what I thought this was. It's like, oh, yeah, let me skip that.
Although I'm kind of curious, now that there's the whole, like, Villains Month reveal that the Justice League is supposed to be dead. I'm wondering if the Justice League is somehow being shifted over to the Masters of the Universe for a month. And mm-hmm. So it's like they're gone and they're fighting against the Masters of the Universe, and then they pop back into the regular New 52 universe. I'm wondering if it's something along those lines where it's going to tie into the New 52 that way.
Okay.
So not a bad idea.
I mean, it's a good way to make it work. Like, if they want to get the heroes gone for a month so they can have the villains do the takeover, the best way to do it is to, you know, shuffle them off to a parallel universe, you know. And what better universe to throw them off to but the other DC property of Masters of the Universe, because everybody wants to see He-Man and, you know, Superman going at it, you know.
Let's see. I kind of skimmed through some of the independent books or companies.
Did anyone
here.
Read? We're about to pass Dynamite, I'm presuming. Did anyone read Red Sonja number 1?
No.
No.
I didn't get to it either.
Ah.
Honestly, I saw that Gail Simone was writing it, and I was just like, eh.
It's going to be so edgy. Oh, my God. I read none of her books, by the way. Not because I don't like her. Half of it is because I mostly grew up reading Marvel stuff, so I never read any of her. I don't even know what she did before she was in DC. But, like, Fat Girl, I don't read now. And
yeah.
I tried The Movement when it came out, and I read the first issue, and I was like, nah. So, I don't know her. I don't see the appeal of her necessarily. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Dirk.
That's just me.
Hey, what?
I was going through the list of things that came out this week, and I noticed that the latest Overstreet comic book price guide came out this week. Is that a big seller in your store?
Nope.
Not at all?
No, the internet exists. Why do you need a book?
No, I understand. I was kind of curious to see what people do for pricing nowadays and how they treat the hardcover or just like the hard copy of price guides.
Yeah, when our store decided to pick up comics and we first kind of shifted over, because we started out as a video game and toy store and we added on comics, you know, a couple of years ago. We bought an Overstreet the first year, and we quickly found out that prices in a price guide are great, but that doesn't mean people are paying that.
Right.
We found that the number one thing you do is you go to eBay and you type in the book you're looking for, and there's a little button on the side down at the bottom that says completed listings, and you click that completed listings and it shows you what the books have actually sold for in the last 30 days. And it'll be, if it's listed in red, it means it didn't sell. If it's listed in green, it means it did sell. And that's the number one thing that we price off of.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah, you just go and you look at the listings. And, of course,
The only store that's told me the same, you know, similar story. So I was just curious. That's why I asked.
It's not that there isn't, you know, a little bit of fudging, of course, because, you know, things are graded, whether or not something's mint or near mint or, you know, good or fine or, you know, whatever. That's going to, you know, fluctuate prices, you know, here and there. And you always try to take that into account. But the majority of books that you get nowadays Most everything is considered near mint because most people pick it up, they flip through it, read it once, and put it in bag and board, and you know they don't touch it for years. Mm-hmm. And so everything just kind of hits that same kind of price level anymore. And for the most part, you go to eBay because if it's sold, then you know what the price is people are willing to pay for it. And stuff like Batman Incorporated 8, where you know Damian gets killed. You think that that's a big issue. You know, there's going to be big money in that. But you go and you look, and when it sells for maybe $12. You know, there are people that put, you know, Death of Damian, hard to find issue, sold out, first print, $50. But nobody's buying them for $50, you know. So that's one of the things, like, with the price guide. The price guide may say, well, this is a highly collectible issue. It's worth $30. Well, just because it's worth $30 in a guide doesn't mean people are paying it.
Right. I was just going to say that it's probably more useful for older books as opposed to things that may be hot, you know, relatively hot off the press. So
well, and over the last 2 or 3 years, a lot more comics have been listed on eBay and selling. So a couple of years ago, if you would get something like the first appearance of U.S. Agent, you know. You might not necessarily find that on eBay, being kind of older and obscure. But nowadays, I mean, it's very rare to run across a book that isn't listed or recently sold on eBay. That's just pretty much the entire history of comics is on eBay, you know, for good or for bad.
So I guess eventually we're going to see the demise of the Overstreet comic book price guide is as sad as that sounds for some of the older fans.
Well, and the funny thing is that most people that bought Overstreet, like they weren't buying it for the guide itself with the prices. They were buying it to look up. They wanted to find like what was the first appearance of a character. Like they were using it as an index, you know. Adventures of Superman. A lot of people didn't know, like, it took over from Superman, and then there was a new Superman volume, and then Superman went back to the old numbers. You know, people were trying to figure out how the volumes fit together and stuff like that. But nowadays, you got the internet.
Right.
You know, you just type into Google whatever you're looking for, and Google finds it for you, you know? So the stuff like that from Overstreet is going away, too. Like, there's really – it's very hard to find a compelling reason for publications like that to exist.
Yeah, it's kind of like why Wizard went away, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Went away for a couple of different reasons.
Yeah, but there was a lot of fanboyish stuff going on in Wizard and things like that, a lot of speculation stuff. But, yeah, I mean, the one thing that Wizard was known for a long time was that it had that price guide of the latest prices. But, you know, even now, you know, something's going to go to print and it's not going to come out for, you know, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? And in the course of 6 to 8 weeks, prices on stuff can dramatically change because of what gets published and, you know, leaked out.
Various printings, too, so.
Yeah. So, and especially when things go back to second, third, fourth print, a lot of times it makes those first print prices come down because the collector's market isn't the same as it was. And people go, well, I just want to read it. I don't care if it's a first print, you know. And so that's another reason why digital has taken off so much. ICV2 just had a report over the last, you know, week or so where they said that, you know, print sales are up, you know, so it's definitely helping the industry. But digital sales are up like 700% over 2 years ago. You know, so there's this ginormous growth in digital sales, even though there is still growth in paper sales. You know, so it's this growth of digital is coming from a whole different market of people. Who normally weren't buying print, that didn't care about print. And we see that quite a lot where people come in and they're like, you know, do you have, you know, such and such issue of Walking Dead? And we're like, well, yeah, we've got like a third print over there of, you know, 105 or something. There's a second print or third print. And they're like, oh, yeah, cool, whatever. And they buy it because they don't care if it's a second or third print. They just want to read that issue. That's an issue that they missed, you know. So
yeah, people aren't really buying comics to – you know, for collector's items anymore.
Yeah, nowadays, we don't even treat something as being that particularly special unless it's autographed. If someone walks in with a bunch of books that are autographed, then we'll pay them, you know, a nice amount for it because that is something that people will buy to collect because they like the writer or artist and the fact that they signed it means something to them. Mm-hmm. But just having a first print of something, special anniversary issue or, stuff like that, just none of that means anything anymore.
Right.
I don't know what that has to do with Red Sonja, but there you go.
No, I was moving on to Gemstone Publishing. We had just passed Dynamite and some of the other independents, so I was moving down the list of independent publishers. Move on to IDW, anybody?
Wait, did you skip Dark Horse?
Yeah. Well, he jumped to Dynamite, so.
Right, because I was going alphabetically.
Go back to Dark Horse.
I was going alphabetically because we jumped straight to DC, so we skipped Dark Horse.
Oh, yeah, we should have done Dark Horse at the beginning.
But I haven't read anything from Dark Horse, but if someone has.
Who do you got?
Oh, you got something from Dark Horse?
Nope.
I don't.
No, nope. I'm the only person that read Dark Horse this week? Oh, man, Dark Horse hates us.
No, because I like Star Wars. And I'm going to read that Captain Midnight series when it starts.
Yeah. Well, Dream Thief, that I'm showing here, Dream Thief issue 3. I continue to love this series. This is the guy who falls asleep, and when he wakes up, for some reason, he's murdered somebody, and he's got to figure out why. And it turns out that what's happening is people who have been wrongfully murdered are coming into his body and taking over his body when he falls asleep and getting revenge. And one of the things that'll happen is after he wakes up, he'll wake up for a while and he'll start trying to put the pieces together. And while he's thinking about it, the memories of the person who took over his body will start to flood in. So he'll get to see their life and the things that led up to their demise. And then he'll see what they did in his body in order to get their revenge. And so he's starting to find out that these murders that he's been committing while he's asleep are all somehow connected. So we're not quite sure, why he's in this string, why this string is together. But every murder that happens is somehow connected to some other murder, that's happened previously in the story. For instance, he murders his girlfriend. He doesn't understand why. Well, his girlfriend had murdered some other guy who she thought was this creep who was going to abduct her and rape her, but it turns out he was just a regular dude who was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and she read it the wrong way. And then his girlfriend had been connected with some other guy who was dealing drugs on the side, and so that guy ended up getting murdered. So he took over his body in order to murder the guys who had murdered him. And the guys who had murdered him were part of this gay porn ring, and so he wakes up in a room full of dead gay porn stars. He's got to figure out why he's there. One of the guys who's in there, had been the victim of a hate crime, and victim of the hate crime. Someone else, because of the hate crime, had ended up dead, and so he wakes up the next morning and he's standing in front of a KKK leader who's hanging from the tree in front of him, and he doesn't understand why he killed this KKK guy. But then the pieces start to come together, and it's all these things are interconnected, and you don't know the big picture yet, but it's starting to come together. And I really like that in the storytelling.
You almost sold me on it.
Yeah. And check it out. You got to check it out. It's really fun.
A limited series, right?
Yeah. It's only
five. Three or five. Okay.
The other one here is To Hell You Ride, which is the horror story co-written by Lance Henriksen. The actor who's been in 900,000 movies. And this is the final part of his horror story of this small town that's been taken over. This Native American who never cared about his history and his past gets stuck in this legend. He's starting to get overtaken by ghosts of the Native Americans who want to have revenge on the white man. And, he kind of starts to... He gets kind of conflicted in the middle of the story because it's on the one hand, it's okay, yeah, the white man came in and stole our land and whatever, but he's we weren't exactly the nicest people either, He starts looking at the tribe wars in between each other and how they would, scalp each other and kill each other and whatever. So it's kind of been a fun, I don't want to say fun, but it's been kind of an interesting look at the way that, different people look at their heritage and history and, things like that. And then plus it's just good and gory and bloody and people explode and people catch on fire and, you know, immolate in the middle of a hotel lobby and, you know, stuff like that. So it just got some neat stuff all the way around, and it's been a really fun story.
Did it wrap up well? Because it looks like this was the last issue in this limited series.
Yeah, yeah, this was number 5 of 5. I'm trying to think here. It leaves it.
I'm presuming it's got to leave it with some sort of, you know, open-ended bit, so that there's a possibility of a sequel, right?
Not so much. I mean, I guess I'll just go ahead and spoil it since the book's out. The guy dies at the end. He dies, and the people of this town that have been stuck in the middle of this battle kind of, like, he sacrifices himself against these vindictive demons, these vindictive ghosts that have come to haunt this town, and he sacrifices himself to stop it. And so all the people kind of come, and you've got the white man and the red man coming together, and they wrap up his body and they carry him off in the mountains to give him a proper burial. And you get this feeling that you're not the story that you've just read. You know, when you read comics, they're written from the standpoint of this is what's happening, but you get to the end and you get the feeling of it's several years in the future and you've just heard the legend of this character. So it kind of leaves with that feeling that story that you've just finished is now, you know, something that someone has told someone else, and it's been handed down, you mm-hmm. know, a generation to generation. So it does kind of have more of like this epic legendary feel when it wraps up to it. So it was a good ending. Yeah.
Call it Beowulf. Okay. All right. We actually skipped past Boom Studios too. So did you have anything? Aspen, Avatar, Boom.
I didn't have anything from them.
Dark Horse, anything else?
I do want to mention when we get to IDW.
I see Archie. There was a Dark Horse number one, a Blood Brothers number one. I kind of skipped. I saw the cover for that. I was kind of curious about it, but if no one's read it, maybe I'll take a look at it for next week or the week after.
I just kind of skimmed it briefly because when I was going through the comics, I was like, oh, what the heck is this thing? And it's vampires in modern day.
I'm sure that person that drew the cover probably didn't draw the inside, right?
I don't know.
Okay, I might check that out then.
From what I gathered, it's like the two guys. There's like a black guy and a white guy, but they're both vampires, so they're considered the Blood Brothers.
Right.
And there's like this gang of vampires that are like your motorcycle gang, you know. They're like the mean guys who are coming into town and, you know, killing people. And these other two guys are vampires, but like they don't want to be. So it's like they're the good guys fighting against the bad guys, even though they're all vampires. But I didn't get into it really in depth. I just kind of, you know, it's like, this is brand new. So I just kind of skimmed through it, but it is something that I plan to get back to.
I'm going to go on Dark Horse's website and see if I can find the preview pages for that.
Cool.
But let's see. I haven't read anything from IDW for this week, but I did want to mention the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles villain micro-series number 4 for Allopets. I will be reading that this weekend. I've kind of given up on the G.I. Joe comics for now. And Half Past Danger, number 3, I might skim through.
I'm trying to find...
Anyone else see anything from IDW they want to mention?
Not this week.
You know what? I hate doing it, but I read X-Files number 2, and it's not good. I'm really...
Well,
I don't know. I don't know if you guys were big X-Files fans when the TV show came out, but like for me, the original TV show, it ended in a place that was different from where it started. And on the one hand, it's good to have growth, but on the other hand, like when the show first started, you would see someone talking about ghosts, you know, but you didn't actually see ghosts. and someone would talk about aliens, but you didn't actually see aliens. Like, someone would go out in the woods and there'd be a bright light, and then they'd come back and they'd say, whoa, it was a UFO. But you didn't really know if it was a UFO. You didn't know if it was a government, you know, plot. You didn't know if it was, you know, the Soviets with some new technology. You know, you really didn't know what was going on. And that was the whole point of, like, I want to believe. There were things you had to take on faith and things that, you know, weren't explained. And when the show ended, they explained everything. Like, they just flat out laid out, oh, these aliens came to Earth and they were going to colonize by interbreeding, and the secret government was set up to deal with them. But then they brought in their own shape-shifting bounty hunters to try to kill them so they could get out of the deal. And it was like, it was really stupid once you heard it.
Right.
and this, like, it's continuing on that whole storyline of there are these shape-shifting super soldiers who are alien human hybrids.
Oh god, they're Skrulls.
And it's like the lone gunmen are alive, but they're in a secret bunker hidden under their graves in Arlington National Cemetery. And so Mulder, in order to find him, has to dig up the grave, and it looks like it's a coffin lid, but he opens the coffin lid, and it's a stairway down to their secret bunker. And it's like, this is just stupid. Like, you know, it's – I so wanted this to be good and to have that kind of old-school feel, but it just feels like the worst B-movie conspiracy. You know, it's like there's a group called The Asylum. Like, when there's a new Transformers movie, they make a movie called Transmorphers.
That's right.
You know, they do, and this feels like a knockoff of something. Like, it doesn't feel
original.
No, it's there's so much about it that's just so bad, and the characters, like, they meet up with the lone gunman, and of course everybody looks the same. You know, apparently no one's fashions or hairstyles or facial hair have changed in, you know, the 15 years since the show's been on, and you know, it's just like. I wanted it to be so much more than what it is, and what it is not anything special, and I'm just so disappointed by it. So thumbs down.
I just looked at the preview pages for the Blood Brothers, and yes, the art is different on the inside. Uh-huh. It's not horrible. It kind of gave me like a Chris Samney type vibe to it, but I won't be reading it.
I lost Blood Brothers. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's okay. Image.
I just want to mention Invincible number 4, even though I'm not reading it. I should just start with issue 100 and keep reading forward, because I'll never get caught up.
Actually,
I have like 70 plus issues to get caught up.
You know, I thought the same thing, and I read the majority of Invincible in one afternoon. I probably read from issue 12 through issue 90. In the course
yeah,
of
that's day. Like, actually, let me tell you right now what issue I'm on. Open the iPad.
It is a very easy read, and it all flows together very well. And I have to say that the book, Invincible, like, you know in Invincible that Invincible himself is never going to die, but there's everyone else around him is kind of fair game.
Right.
And there have been characters along the way that have died. And so when a villain comes in, like, you see this cover, that's his fiance, who's pregnant with his child. She gets attacked. And while you're reading the book, there's a very real sense that she could die or the baby could not make it.
Right.
And that's the type of thing that Kirkman is not afraid to do in his book, you know? So at least he's put a book together where you actually kind of care about the characters and there is a real sense of danger. You know, there's never a sense of danger for Invincible, but he's trying to always save all the people around him because of his actions and his involvement. And so it was like this issue 104 was a very good issue.
Well, I see that I'm on issue 16.
Okay. Well, you can get up to 90 in one afternoon.
If I didn't have any, you know, other things to do. I'm gonna see if I can get to 30 in 2 weeks.
Baby steps, man. Baby steps.
Yeah. Progress.
Come on, what else are you doing all day? I mean, seriously. Are you saving the world? Are you building a nuclear reactor? No, come on, sit down and read some Invincible.
Knock some Invincible out. That's the goal. Okay, so nothing else from Image. Let's get into Marvel. I'm not going to go through every Marvel book, so I'm going to start alphabetical order and just name stuff. So if I skip, you see me skip something, let me know. All New X-Men number 14, which I wrote a review, which you can read on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com.
No kidding.
Another fine issue by Bendis and Immonen.
Immonen.
I like Immonen Toast.
Me too. I like his colors. Well, actually, I guess he doesn't do the colors, but I like the colors in his book. So the All-New X-Men, well, the original X-Men take on Mystique and Sabretooth and Silver Samurai and some Hydra agents. Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra.
And there's a lot of deception with Lady... Oh, yeah, and Lady Mastermind's there.
Yeah, so a lot of deception. Yeah, I give Bendis some credit. You know, and Immonen some credit for pulling off a lot of those Lady Mastermind illusions.
Illusion's always been like a blah power to me.
Right, but I, you know, they actually, you know, they the way they depicted it in this issue was pretty good.
Except when Phantomance does his misdirection.
That's another story. That's actually part of A plus X actually this week. I didn't get to read Uncanny X-Force. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I guess and Uncanny X-Force. I didn't read A plus X, but I guess since they're trying to do like consecutive issues, I need to read it.
But. Not yet.
As I'm saying, whenever they start, they get to that part.
Gotcha.
I need to do it. But so yeah, there's some funny bits in here with Iceman and Thor, and I thought the ending was kind of abrupt with that like one or two page panel with Jean Grey. But besides that, fine issue.
It was good.
Avengers number 16, more Hickman mumbo jumbo, but at least it's drawn by Stefano Caselli.
It wasn't that much mumbo-jumbo this month or this week because I think this is coming up by week.
Yeah, because it was co-written or co-plotted or whatever by Nick Spencer.
By Spencer, right. I got one thing to say about this, and Doug may get this, but we had a sighting of Space Knights of Galador. Freaking awesome. The four Space Knights who were flying up towards the reader in one panel. It's pretty cool.
Didn't they just reprint that?
They did. They did the Chris Bautista drawn, I believe, and I think it was Jim Starlin wrote that. That Space Knights limited series that tried to reboot the Space Knight mythology, but it was just nice to see that Galador made an appearance in this, and obviously. You know, they're laying some groundwork for more spacefaring adventures, you know, within Avengers and Marvel Comics in general. So it was nice to see. You know, there's a little bit more development of Night Mask and Starbrand in this. So, you know, and there's some fighting as well. There's not nearly as much mumbo jumbo as Tim Dog makes it out to be. it's definitely another building block in the storyline.
I enjoyed the stuff with Night Mask and
Starbrand.
I was checking in back with them because I forgot they existed.
Well, you know, it's if there's one weakness to Hickman is that he's got a lot of parallel and intersecting plot lines, and right. He has to service them basically pretty much each issue so that you don't forget that they exist. And if he kind of leaves one or two aside and he circles back around to get them, you're sort of left, you know, kind of backtracking, like, what happened? I don't remember this. So
part of my problem, though, right now is after Age of Ultron – like, I don't care about Infinity. Like, I'm so kind of burned out by Marvel and the whole crossover thing and the big event thing that I'm looking at this Infinity and everything that's building up, and I'm just like, I don't want to read it. Like, I'm not feeling any sort of love for it. I'm not excited for it. It's just, it's one of those things that's going to be there, and I'll probably flip through it when it comes in, and I don't feel the need to buy it. I don't feel the need to collect it, you know. It's just, it's one of those things that's going to be there, and I really don't care right now.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you, especially, you know, this. If there was ever a time to really stress event fatigue, and this was a term that was being bandied about, like, what, three years ago? I think it's real now.
Yeah, before even Flashpoint, New 52, and all of that, back when it was still Secret Avengers or Secret Invasion.
Or Age of M.
I guess you can go back to even that stuff, yeah.
You know, Civil War. There was definitely...
What was Age of M?
That was...
What Age of M was?
That's not House of M, right?
Oh, House of M. I'm sorry. I think there was some Age of M.
But also. there was an Age of X. What the hell was that? I'm gonna Google it after the show.
I don't know, but the point is, we've just illustrated the point, which is, you know, all these events seem to blend together, and we're all fatigued by them, so that we're just unable to piece apart, you know, to pick apart what happened in what event. So, you know, I'm definitely feeling it. So I definitely don't blame you for Infinity.
Yeah, so many of them. When you get to the end, they're so unimportant. I mean, Civil War had some things that at least lasted.
Right.
Yeah, it took about 2 years before it finally all faded away. But, you know, Secret Invasion, what the hell did Secret Invasion prove? Like, what?
It got Norman in the spotlight.
Yeah, yeah, but so?
And it brought back some characters that were not to be dead.
Exactly.
But, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it didn't really even matter. Like, that could have been... that could have been a 6-issue story within Avengers that didn't need to be a massive crossover. You know what I mean?
Here's my gripe.
Well, that's according to the stock. That's not according to the stockholders, but go on.
My gripe is... You know what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
I'm settled on the fact that, yes, there's going to be an event every year.
No, there's multiple events every year.
Well, if there were only one event a year, I should say, if there was one event a year, I'd be fine. Usually they only have one a year. The mistake was trying to shove Age of Ultron in here the same 3 months from Infinity starting, or at least having the end of Age of Ultron take place like 3 months before Infinity started. And I've griped about that enough, so I won't really get into it.
And also that it was no good.
Yeah.
That too. Well, yeah. Because it was no good.
But it was pretty bad.
I was going to say the whole, you know, because they always hype, you know, this event's going to change everything. Or this is the event of the year. I was like, how can you have Age of Ultron as the event of the year? And then 3 months later, Infinity, the event of the year. No, doesn't work that way.
Well, and the scary thing is like, I know that about the time Infinity number 3 comes out, Marvel's going to announce the final event of 2013.
Well, they've announced what's going to come out of Infinity, which is Inhumanity.
Right.
But that's just the Inhumans getting a series, which, again... Well,
like, that's also going to be like the banner that's going to be on all the Marvel books, like Heroic Age.
Right.
It's going to be humanity, inhumanity on all. That's like the age that's going to be the big thing for 2014 going forward until the next event.
Yeah, does anybody care about the Inhumans enough that they're excited for a main
war? You missed my rant last week.
Yeah, we definitely
so quickly. So my whole thing is I'm an X-Men fan, so I'm a fan of the mutants. First they did House of M and took away a whole bunch of mutants and had them down to under 200 because, you know, there's too many mutants in the Marvel Universe. They had to be special, you know, make them more unique and get rid of everyone. That lasted, what, 3 years, however many years it was. They do Age of Avengers for the X-Men. They bring them all back. Hey, there's more mutants in the world now. So now we're going to spread Terrigen Mist across the globe and create a whole bunch of Inhumans. So now mutants aren't special anymore. Because there'll be a whole bunch of Inhumans instead.
Are there going to be any Inhuman mutants?
So
no one knows. There probably will be.
So now they're pushing the mutants to the back. Got to make room for franchises we have control over in the movies, like Avengers and Inhumans, who we can make movies out of.
The only way that they could possibly make it interesting for me is if they bring back Buried Alien. which
if Quasar makes
an appearance and they're having a race through the galaxy and then they're brought back to the Marvel Universe, then fine. I'm in at that point, but until that happens. I'm
out. Man, I'm out until they bring back Rom Space Knight. That went totally over Tim's head. Anyway.
Yeah.
He's way too young.
Yes, I know. So, just basically the whole point is we're all very fatigued with events and Marvel.
But that's a bad thing. I am looking forward to Infinity. I've been looking forward to Infinity. Age of Ultron, I just kind of read. But I am looking. Yeah, because it was there. Like Infinity and Battle of the Atom. Gotta mention that. Right. You see how it's considered like X-Men stuff in their own corner of the universe anyway. So I don't really count that as like a big Marvel event. That's just X-Men.
Yeah, unless they start crossing over into everybody. That's the thing.
Which I don't like. I like my X-Men separated.
No, we'll see. We'll see.
Avengers Assemble number 17. Haven't read it yet, but I will.
It's more Captain Marvel crossover stuff.
And I'm not even. I need to just not read it because I read the first three parts of this. I read the Enemy Within number one, and the Captain Marvel tie-in, and then the previous Avengers Assemble tie-in, and I just don't care.
Well, you know. I'm willing to see it through. I just want to see what they do with this. If they really are trying to push Captain Marvel as the lead female character of the Marvel Universe, then, I want to see how they execute this particular crossover and if they're able to establish her as that type of character. I'm hesitant to say that they're not going to do it.
I am not hesitant to say that they're not going to do
it. Cable and X-Force number 11. Nice little fun issue, mostly focusing on Domino and Boom Boom.
You mean Thelma and Louise?
Yes. Yeah.
They have to rescue a new mutant before their powers activate.
Yeah. There was one panel in this I was not happy with when they basically melt off the middle of the Brooklyn Bridge. I took that personally. Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn. I did not like that.
I had no clue where they were at. I figured they were out on the West Coast somewhere.
No, if I see Sal LaRocca at New York Comic Con, I'll bring that up. I'll be like, yo, man, if the script brought this up, I'll take it up with the writer.
I'm not happy. Deadpool 13.
Anybody? Bueller?
Nope. Fantastic Four number 10.
I swore this off, but I still read it. I read it for academic review purposes.
Traitor.
How was it?
And... Oh, wait, hold on. I typed my notes in all caps. So, here we go. So, it's taken Fraction 10 issues to explain what the hell the Fantastic Four have been doing, traveling through time and space. Why does it take 10 issues for Fraction to tell us?
And why is
it? If he had just dropped a couple of hints. I'm sorry, Tim. Just keep your thought just for a second. If he'd been able to just tease out a couple of hints, maybe readers like Tim and other people who dropped it because it didn't seem like it was going anywhere might have stayed on. Go ahead, Tim.
So does he finally reveal it this issue?
He reveals to a certain extent why they've been visiting the times and the places that they've been visiting and what Reed has been, what kind of information Reed has been gathering. Basically, in this issue, the cat is out of the bag and they have to tell everyone on this little family field trip what is going on with their powers. And they have to go back to, believe it or not, the start of the American Revolution. And the signing of the Declaration of Independence, because it is July. And, they have to deal with, spoilers, a Skrull who is impersonating Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin. So, basically, if you've been reading this series up until now, there's actually some sense of there's definitely a bunch of reveals, let's put it that way, in this issue. And if it's enough to keep you reading, I don't know, it's enough for me to keep reading it academically, but I don't think I would pick this up in individual format, I'd probably have to wait to see if it's worth picking up in a trade. To be perfectly honest, it's gone down to that point.
Does it explain things why everybody in ancient Rome spoke modern English, or?
Not that, but that's actually touched upon, at least that particular time jump in FF number 9, if it's okay to jump to that. Is it okay?
That almost has me curious to read it.
So can I we'll jump see. To FF number 9?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how come, obviously there was a month miss because Fantastic Four 10 is out, but FF number 9 is out also.
No, FF number 9 came out a month after, if I'm not mistaken. Well, they may have missed the issue.
I think they came out like the same month, at least they started the same month.
Could be wrong. They may have missed an issue. Yeah. Just as an aside, I don't know if you read this on one of the comic book news websites, but Mike Allred, the artist for FF, had a break-in in his house, and like a whole bunch of like computers and stuff got stolen, and some of his work, you know, like my understanding was that some of it was backed up, but he definitely lost some of it. So if he is behind an issue, maybe that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah, I've read I remember when that happened.
Yeah, he and his wife Laura, who, you know, they both worked together on this. So
that was, you know, like that a might month ago.
Exactly. That might be a reason why they're off by an issue, you know, between the two of them. But anyway, back to my all caps review. More Fraction finally developing a coherent story. 9 freaking issues into the story. Too many readers have left the book because it took too long to develop. And they touch upon the alien who was impersonating, who was basically acting as Julius Caesar back in ancient Rome. So there's definitely movement in the FF storyline, although it's not movement in the arc where supposedly they're going to try to end Dr. Doom, but instead there's going to be some more time travel hijinks, this time on the FF's part. Again, seriously, you know, I say this in all seriousness, this is definitely trade-worthy stuff, because I think this is long-form storytelling. It's just the month-to-month has been a grind, and it's not. I don't appreciate it.
Don't appreciate it.
I don't.
Okay.
It's a gong for me. You know what's funny is that I like the issues. I just hate the fact that it took this long to get to this point.
Iron Man number 13, more of the secret origin of Tony Stark, which I haven't read yet, but I will. I'm actually kind of enjoying that.
Really? I tried to read it. I tried.
Greg Land's background art, I see. At least his name's on the cover, so I'm like, eh.
It's awful.
Morbius, Lurin Vampire number 7.
Now, Classic's not here to review that. Classic, we miss you.
Moving along to its cancellation date. Nova number 6, I reviewed that on theclicknation.com. Might not review another Nova book because not too many people are clicking that link, I see.
This was the first issue of the new creative team, right?
Yeah. Who I like the new creative team.
Right,
I Paco Medina's art, and Zeb Wells is nice.
I didn't mind this issue so much. It was kind of interesting, although it definitely came off like an Ultimate Spider-Man type of issue.
I like that. I like where it ended. So, put it that way.
I didn't mind it. Dirt, did you read it?
Yeah, you know, see what happens next issue. And, of course, the solicits for October, I know what we see what happens. But so I'm definitely hyped for that. Let's see. Get through these rest of the books. Savage Wolverine number 7 was awesome. Did any of y'all read this?
I did.
No.
I did. You're missing out. Like, I don't know. Dirt, are you at all a Wolverine fan, just out of curiosity?
I was for several years. I was reading it, but...
But I'm talking about like mid, early 80s, late 80s, something like that, because the brown and gold uniform just brings back floods of memory. You know, it floods me with memories of, like, kind of the good old days. So reading this, it's definitely kind of harkens back to that time. There's definitely a nice twist at the end that Tim, you know, that I'm not going to spoil here. I don't know if Tim's review got into it.
I read it.
Oh, yeah, no, but I don't know if your review got to the twist.
I haven't reviewed it yet. I've been meaning to.
Oh, okay. So there's definitely a nice twist at the end. So it's interesting to see where this goes. But the tone, the overall tone of this story arc is pretty cool. It's definitely reminiscent of the Brown and Gold days of Wolverine.
I like the when Wolverine is about to fight whoever the big ninja guy, and the little blind guy's like, "Don't look him in the, don't stare him straight in his eyes. You're gonna provoke him."
Blah, blah. He's gonna follow you to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, he'll follow you to the ends of the earth. He'll search for you and he'll pull your skin from your bones. Blah blah blah. And like the guy's like not even paying attention to Wolverine, and Wolverine like grabs some rock. The guy's like, "What are you doing?" Wolverine throws the rock, hits the guy in the head. The guy turns around and he's all like,
he's all mad. And Wolverine's like, and
Wolverine looks at him, he's like, "Hey, right here, let's go."
I thought that was pretty good. So like I said, it was definitely a fun read, and it was reminiscent of a different time. So I definitely like that.
Yeah, I'm not reading the standalone Wolverine book, but I'm reading Savage because it's just fun. Don't worry about continuity, just read.
Oh yeah, I mean, they even put a blurb in at the beginning of the issue, like, yeah, this happens a long time ago, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, so let's see, Superior Carnage number one, it was all right.
You read it? Okay.
I mean, I can't. It was Carnage in jail. He gets broken out by some low-level villain and stuff. Thanos Rising number 4 or 5. I haven't read yet.
Didn't read it either. Anybody? Bueller?
Thor, God of Thunder number 10.
This was awesome.
Thor is great under
Dirt. Are you reading this?
Jason Aaron.
No.
You should.
Yeah, I know.
I say that with little to no reservation.
You guys were talking about it last month and got my interest piqued on it. So I've got the issues sitting there to read. Just something I haven't gotten around to yet.
Sure. He's done a good job because, like I said, the Marvel books I've read growing up were X-Men and Spider-Man. I never read Avengers books. I never read like the single hero books like Captain America, Iron Man, or Thor. Never read any of those. Now I am. Iron Man's kind of Captain America started out but it looks like it's getting a little better. Especially with Rick Remender on there, so I have high hopes. But Thor is awesome.
Yes, it is. It is absolutely one of those books that I love opening up to read when I get it. So, the art, Esad Ribic's art is awesome. And the way this is being written is, it's phenomenal. It's definitely reminiscent of the Simonson, like the long form storytelling that Simonson put in when he first started and put and introduced Beta Ray Bill way back in the early 80s. And, this has definitely been one of the highlights of my collecting the last couple of years. And I met Esad Ribic at the New York Comic Con last year, and I saw some of the commissions that he was basically churning out within like a night or two of being hired to write or draw a commission at the con, and they were phenomenal. He works in watercolor and pencil, and it's just beautiful stuff. I can't recommend this book enough. You have to read it from jump, and if this is something that you're going to read in collected format, I think it will come off very well in collected format.
Yeah, this will definitely collection, because it's been one from issue one to whatever this is 10. It's the same story.
Yep.
But Thunderbolts number 13. Haven't read it, but I will. I gave Thunderbolts up, but since Charles Soule is on new writer, I'll give it. I like the last issue, so we'll see if that continues. Phil Noto's. Well, he was on art, but Steve Dillon is back on art, but I can put up with him if the writing's fine. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 25 was awesome again.
It was good. I liked it.
More Miles Morales.
Finally getting over a little bit of PTSD.
Yeah. He's back in the game.
Finally.
Uncanny X-Force number 8. I read it. It's kind of fine. It's doing the whole cluster Phantom X. Weapon 8
Psylocke storyline, filling in the blanks of what happened at the end of Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force
really
run. And
like a bad habit, but I should read it for academic repurposes and see what you're talking about.
Yeah, the art is, I mean, it's not horrible, but it's kind of different, I'll put it that way.
Gotcha.
But as long as it changes once this story arc is done, I'll be happy.
Okay.
I'm enjoying Cable and X-Force more.
Gotcha. Has anyone been reading What If AVX?
I was reading the first one. I didn't know the second one was out. So I will check that out. Yeah, I need to look for
Dirt?
That.
No.
No?
I mean, I just didn't care enough about the main story to read a What If on it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Wolverine Max number 9.
Nope.
I haven't read any Max series ever, so no. And X Factor number 259.
I actually haven't
been reading X Factor, but I read that just because I heard they revealed the Shatterstar Longshot connection.
Yeah, and it's all.
Which I thought they had already revealed that before, but right. I guess they changed it again.
It's all a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
And since when? Okay, so I'm way out the loop with Shatterstar. The only thing I know is him and Richter are lovers. I know that much. But since when were his? Did he actually have powers and they were teleportation powers?
I don't know.
How long has that been going on?
You got me.
But yeah, I won't say we won't spoil what their connection
is. It's in this book. It's kind of nice.
I mean, it's the one that they've been. Put it this way, it's one that they've teased before, but there is a extra wrinkle.
There's definitely, this is there. Definitely a classic Claremont style hanging or dangling plot line that's finally been wrapped up. I definitely like that Peter David in this, you know, like basically in the death throes of this run of X Factor is tying up as many of these loose ends as possible. It's kind of nice.
I'm going over it in my head again, and it's like, is that really what they did? Yeah, it is. So, yeah. And then, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, that's Marvel. And I haven't read any of these, but I just want to mention Valiant has Archer and Armstrong number 11 and Harbinger Wars number 4, which is the finale of their events.
Dirt, you read any of those?
Nope. Dang. I read the first few issues of some of the Valiant books, and this Valiant universe is just not for me.
Gotcha.
And I'm actually getting into the Valiant universe now because I read last week's Exo Man of War, which is a new jumping on point, and then I read Quantum and Woody. And I'll be reading Eternal Warrior when it starts next month or whenever that is. And Archer and Armstrong has a new story arc starting. I don't think it was this issue, but maybe next week. Secret Sect or something it's called. So I'll be checking that out. And we are past due time to be ending the show. Oh, actually, is that the issue? Anyway, yeah, I'm looking at the Archer and Armstrong cover that Dirt put up. I need to go back and see if that's the beginning of the new, some four-part story, I think they said. But, got one tweet tonight, just a second ago, from @RoddyCat on Twitter. He says, I like how Thanos Rising is painting this intergalactic killer as a nose-open simp or the bottom of an MS relationship. Yeah, it really makes him look threatening to see how much of a simp he was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But he killed a bunch of his own babies.
That's right.
Except for Gamora, apparently. She escaped. Yeah, I enjoyed the first issue of Thanos Rising, but now I'm kind of just like...
I'm waiting for it to end.
Yeah, it seems like it's an issue too long now.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to end. I'm just waiting for to see what, if anything, you know, is all that different in this iteration or this particular telling of Thanos' origin. So
nice changing of colors you got there, Dirt.
Did anybody read Watson and Holmes?
No.
No, sir.
This is actually a fun little book. It's the story of Sherlock Holmes, but it's set in modern New York. And so you've got Watson, who's a former military guy, now working as a medical intern at a major hospital. And Holmes is just a, you know, small-time PI, basically. And somebody comes into the emergency room, and they've been drugged and whatever, and Holmes comes in to, ask some questions, and Watson is standing there watching and decides that he's a little too invested. He wants to find out what's going on, so they embark on this journey, through New York City. And it's one of those books that you can tell, like, the artist and the writer both must live in New York City, because there's a lot of landmarks in the background, and they're running across the Brooklyn Bridge and all this kind of stuff going on. And but I mean, it's a pretty good mystery. I've noticed this was a Kickstarter book, and they've got the first several issues available digitally. This is the first one to make it to print through Diamond, but if you go online, you can actually get I think the first four issues digitally. And one of the things that they did is they've released the book this way, the way you currently see it, with the looks like a modern comic, the coloring, whatever, but then they also released it in black and white with tones. So if you want to read it as like this noir New York hard-boiled type story, it's there. But then if you also want to read it kind of as the modern action, gunfight, whatever, it has a little bit of both to it, So depending on what your interest is, it kind of works both ways. So I thought it was a really interesting book. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Cool.
That'll be a good ending point for us tonight.
There you go. Our non-superhero comic of the week.
So I want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. This is where Aiden Turner.
I had to move the mouse back.
Check us out on theclicknation.com and follow Dirt on Twitter at @PCN_Dirt and check out his website popculturenetwork.com. Get that in there since we did our plugs earlier in the show. Get Dirt's in. So for Agent_70, PCN_Dirt, I'm Tim DOGG98 on Twitter. This is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Classic materia!
Yes, Dark One! What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo! I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black, no! Yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art! The man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Jim Lee! Don't give a as long as them pages are hot. And it's written by Chris Claremont, Jeff Johns, Alan Moore, or Grant Morrison.